VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. Well, we are scheduled to have a guest today dealing with the topic of election transparency, election integrity, and we're still seeking to get this guest by way of phone here today. But certainly that's an important issue that I'm hearing from many across this nation as it relates to the upcoming November election, the midterm election, as to the matter of voter integrity and can we have confidence in the vote. So we're continuing to seek to get the guest by way of telephone here today on the broadcast. And it looks like we've just done that. And on the air right now, folks, as we're talking with individuals across this land here about the concerns for voter integrity, the whole matter of election security, many have serious concerns as to where our nation is on this issue. It's not only been a battle going on in Washington as legislation's been introduced to, in essence, federalize elections, removing all state laws from the process, but also has been a battle taking place in states across this nation. Well, addressing this issue in conjunction with the Pro-Life Susan B. Anthony List and the American Principles Project, we welcome to Crosstalk today Ken Cuccinelli, the National Chairman of the Election Transparency Initiative, previously was the Acting Director of the U.S. Citizens and Immigration Services, then as the Acting Deputy Secretary for the Department of Homeland Security, was a leading spokesman for the Administration on Immigration, Election Security, and Homeland Security Issues, serving in state government in the Virginia Senate from 2002 and to 2010, and as Virginia's Attorney General from 2010 to 2014. Mr. Cuccinelli, thank you for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
Good to be with you.
And we are talking to over 125 Christian radio outlets across the land. Understand that there was some scheduling issues going on there. But Mr. Cuccinelli, if you had to, with a broad brush, give a letter grade to the current status of the United States election security and election integrity matter, what would that grade be?
You know, that's an interesting question. I'd probably give it about a C. Maybe a C-plus in some parts of the country. Of course, some parts of the country, I'd give it lower than that. But overall, probably about a C.
Yeah, explain that.
Well, first of all, there are 51 election systems in this country, not one. We break them down by state. That's been true since the Constitution was ratified about 230 years ago. With some exceptions, those exceptions have primarily surrounded the implementation, the appropriate implementation, I might add, of civil rights in states where black citizens were denied the ability to vote. That happened immediately following the Civil War, and then it happened again in the 60s and 70s in particular, though it's continued beyond the 70s to a certain degree. So, but otherwise, it's all the states, 51 of them. We count the District of Columbia for these purposes as a state. And they all have different systems. And one of the actual interesting, just a side note, bases for election security is that we do have 51 different systems. When I was at the Department of Homeland Security as the Deputy Secretary, it was a real advantage when you think of defending the whole nation's election systems from the outside, not dealing with the inside stuff, but from the Russians and the Iranians and the Chinese and so forth. If they hack one state, then they've hacked one state. If the national efforts last year to essentially nationalize our elections, to create one monolithic election system happened, you lose that insulation, that diversification benefit from a security standpoint. Then if they hack the one system, they've hacked the whole system. So I mention that because it hardly ever gets talked about. Most of our concerns, because we've successfully fended off the Russians and Chinese and Iranians, is from within. They're problems of competency. And I will tell you, as a former state legislator, you mentioned I was state attorney general. Before that, I was a state senator in Virginia. And election systems have been largely ignored in state legislatures for many years. And now we see an intense interest in these systems following 2020, and there's a good reason for that. We had an unusual number of failures and problems, and you can characterize it as varying degrees of fraud that went on, depending where you were, and violations of the law, rather blatant, in-our-face violations of the law, and that undermines confidence in the system. But they were worse in some places than others. So you asked me to explain the C.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the hard part of explaining the C grade is that it's different everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the real challenge. Yeah. Some places are much worse than others.
I'd like to play an audio clip. No doubt you've heard this, but this is President Biden just last week telling a group of rally goers that Democrats have a plan in place to make sure no one has the opportunity to steal an election again. That's what he used, that term, steal an election again. I'd like us to hear the audio clip, and then we'll have you comment on this. This is President Joe Biden.
That's within our hands if we just vote. If we elect two more senators, we keep the House and Democrats, we're going to get a lot of unfinished business. We're going to get done. Folks, look, we'll codify Roe v. Wade. We'll ban assault weapons. We'll protect Social Security and Medicare. We'll pass universal pre-K. We'll restore the child care tax credit. We'll protect voting rights. We'll pass election reform and make sure no one ever has the opportunity to steal an election again.
Mr. Cuccinelli, you'd never steal an election again?
Well, look, I mean, until 2020, what is now referred to by the left-wing media as election hysteria or the big lie and so forth was said for 20 years by Democrats. I mean, one of the folks, Raskin, as I recall, maybe Benny Thompson as well, who were leading the impeachment of Trump effort over things like this, were doing it themselves after the 2016 election. It is simply objecting to their essentially expressing their lack of confidence in a particular state or another, that they follow their own rules and that the votes cast match an accurate vote of what was counted. And, you go back 20-plus years to Bush v. Gore in 2000, which is the last time you saw any sort of a burst of interest in the quality of our election systems. Florida was mortified. They were so mortally embarrassed at having their system exposed as so incompetent and non-effectual. There was so much error. Interestingly, there wasn't a lot of allegation of fraud in that election. It was just that the mistakes and incompetence were so massive that it could easily swing a 1,500-vote margin, which is roughly what they were playing within between the two sides, in a state as big as Florida. And most of the problems in our elections are just that. They're incompetence-driven. We saw in the Arizona primary just last week. I mean, they ran out of ballots in Pinal County, one of their largest counties, very shortly after opening the polls.
Yes.
I mean, and when that happens, particularly when it happens, you know, if it's in a 50-50 precinct, let's just call it a precinct for now, it's one thing. But if it's in a more Democrat area or a more Republican area, it's automatically a source of suspicion because that incompetence can have partisan impacts on the outcome. And so it undermines the confidence in the system. And one of the things we find at the Election Transparency Initiative, and I say this in whatever state I'm in, I'll pick one, Wisconsin. If you pick 100 random adults in Wisconsin and put them in a room and ask them to design an election system, they would agree on about 80%+ of what it takes to run a good election. Voter ID, secrecy of the ballot, secure, transparent, you know, all those kinds of common sense things. Unfortunately, this subject more than many is a victim of the polarization in our society. So that the same idea that is sort of proposed in a vacuum in my hypothetical group of 100 Wisconsinites, if it's proposed by someone identified as a Republican or identified as a Democrat, then people who themselves think, well, I'm on the other side, oppose it for no other reason.
Hmm.
And so we're slogging through trying to work through that, and we do see success. I mean, in my home state of Virginia, in Kentucky, in South Carolina, all three of those states, in Pennsylvania recently, they passed Zuckerbucks bans. These are the private monies going into election offices on a bipartisan basis. New Jersey, completely democratically controlled, passed some transparency legislation in the last couple of months. So, you know, objectively, this isn't partisan stuff, but there are people on the left, not everybody on the left, but some radical elements of the left that want messy elections. They want to be able to hide fraud. They want to be able to do ballot trafficking. And one of the things I found interesting in my role is I mostly end up working with people who vote Republican, but I often will work I find myself working with Democrats, sort of older line Democrats, who are frankly concerned about the AOC type faction because they understand they're willing to lie, cheat, or steal to win a race. And some of these more sort of traditional, certainly more honorable people on that side of the aisle don't want to go down that route, but they're afraid of the sort of new radicals, if you will. And so we end up working with some of those folks sort of behind the scenes because if they were seen working with somebody like me, it would not help their reputation politically. But I'm willing to work with anybody to achieve good ends of more transparent and secure elections.
We're talking today with Ken Cuccinelli, who is the national chairman of the Election Transparency Initiative. We're just seconds away from a break, and when we come back, we're going to look through some of the policy recommendations for state government that this group is putting forth. Many of these issues, many would say, are just common sense approaches, and yet the battle to see these matters enacted is very fierce, is very intense. So we're going to be taking a look at many of the recommendations in order to shore up the integrity of the election, as well as to give voters that security, that feeling of satisfaction, knowing that when we go to the polls, that our vote actually is being counted for the persons that I have voted for. And so we're going to be looking at that as well as some of the issues that they are fighting against as in opposition as well. Election Transparency Initiative, our topic here today on Crosstalk. We're going to be back in just 1 minute on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and author at the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, why is the ocean salty?
Chris, salt is added to the ocean on a daily basis as rain falls on the land surface, dissolving salt, which then gets into the rivers and ultimately to the ocean. And we can measure how much salt is carried in the rivers. We also know how much salt is in the ocean. A simple division of the amount of salt by the rate at which it's added shows us that the age of the Earth's oceans is far too young to have allowed for evolution, because evolution assumes that life evolved in the salty sea long ago. But if the oceans were old, they would already be so choked with salt that life would be impossible. You see, Chris, the direct scientific observations do not support the evolution idea. They do support recent creation, and that's the recent creation we read about when we go back to Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today is Ken Cuccinelli, the national chairman of the Election Transparency Initiative. Did serve in the Trump administration, was acting deputy secretary, Department of Homeland Security. He was there engaged in the Virginia Senate for some 8 years. He was the attorney general for the state of Virginia for several years. And talking about this matter of election transparency, election security, and I know it's a concern for many, and I'd like you to address many of the issues that you're fighting for in this regard, because we are seeing a lot of opposition to it. But before we get to that, though, if you had to trace back to a common source or sources that are really disrupting voter security and the integrity of the vote, where does that path lead us? Who or what is at the very hub?
So this actually goes back about 18 years, and you note that's not a random number. And it to some people may sound a little conspiratorial. At the time, they were doing it very much out in the open. It began in Colorado with the Turn Colorado Blue project, and George Soros was getting in with big money. And if you think back to that decade, and there's no reason people listening would ordinarily remember, but you can go check what I'm saying and you'll find it's all accurate.
Mm-hmm.
George Soros put a lot of money into Secretary of State candidates, and he began at the end of that decade and into the next starting to fund prosecutors. This is all part of a destabilization effort, I believe, that he, despite his wealth achieved through capitalism, he is a strong supporter of tyrannical communism. And others got on board, and some of the tactics and techniques were working. They have long since funded litigation on the left, harassing litigations, often effective. If you remember Al Franken, mm-hmm. senator from Minnesota, he was elected because a George Soros-funded Secretary of State broke their rules, violated Minnesota law, combined with a well-funded on the left litigation effort where they essentially cooked up a new winner, that being good old Al Franken. And so it's a real-world example. We can point to Washington State with similar outcomes. Dino Rossi was the winner who lost there, and they've been very effective at it. Now, for the first time, many people on the right are starting to show up, not nearly in the numbers or with the amount of money as the left.
Mm-hmm.
And many on the left are, to put it in street terms, freaking out. You'll see the mainstream media, they get their talking points and they all run with them. Like getting more election officials who aren't Democrats is somehow a threat to democracy. How can it be a threat to democracy to even that up? And right now, I'll use Virginia as an example, which I know best. Glenn Youngkin and the whole Republican ticket swept last year with a Democrat set of rules. They played by the Democrat set of rules that were put in place when the Dems took over completely in 2019. And one of the secrets of success in sort of keeping things between the guardrails was that 3,000 or 4,000 Virginians, as a result of 2020, got fired up, trained themselves, got educated on being election officials, and went inside the polls, not to help Glenn Youngkin, but to make sure the rules were followed and implemented both effectively, accurately, and consistently. And when a registrar, which is the name of the person in a county in Virginia that runs elections in that county, it's different state to state. In Virginia, it's called a registrar. When the registrar in the largest county was violating the voter ID law with respect to absentee ballots, it was one of these new election officials that called him out on it. And turned out it was going on in more than one county. And so it worked. All they did was make him follow the rules. And
isn't that
very
effective? That's a very novel approach. Yeah, very novel approach here. Follow the rules. I mean,
Yeah, indeed. Novel.
I'd like to look at some of these matters that you're advocating for and really pushing the policy recommendations for state government. And the first really seems like a no-brainer, verify the accuracy of voter registration lists. But many are appalled. I mean, just last week, it took a federal district court in Michigan to deny their efforts of Michigan Secretary of State to dismiss this lawsuit against her office for she was trying to get them to dismiss the lawsuit because they did not remove deceased registrants from the state's voter rolls. And I saw this Public Interest Legal Foundation found that, over 25,000 dead Michiganders were registered to vote as of August of 2020.
You might, and you know, they don't argue they're not dead. They argue you can't remove them. Well, you might reasonably ask the question, why on earth would anyone want to leave dead Michiganders on the rolls?
Some over a decade.
There are no really honest, clean answers to that. I mean, the only real reason is so that other people can use those names to vote.
So we have some that have been on for over a decade. Over 17,000 had been dead for over a decade. And this is one first and foremost with your organization is to verify the accuracy of voter registration lists. I'm talking to you from Wisconsin. Our state election commission was charged to do just that. It was to have a government accountability board, but yet they failed to put forth these efforts. The laws are there. They're just not being followed.
Yes, and that was actually one of the biggest problems in 2020. It wasn't that there weren't laws in place. Now, that was true with respect to the Zuckerbucks, and we can come back to that. But if you think about my example from Virginia in 2021, there was a law in Virginia, there still is, that to request an absentee ballot, you have to put the last four digits of your Social Security number on the request application. Well, mass mailings were going out from so-called nonpartisan nonprofits, and of course they're radical left-wing nonprofits, and mass mailing these voter applications, but they didn't know their Social Security numbers. And then they would show up in the registrar's office, and rather than obey a law already on the books, the registrar just decided to ignore it, said, well, COVID, so we won't obey the law.
Yeah.
It wasn't that we needed a law for this. The law already existed. You literally had a government official violating Virginia law. We saw this in Detroit, Philadelphia, Atlanta. We can go around the country with these, where they were not allowing observers who, under their state law, get to observe the count to observe the count. I mean, and again, you go back to that question I asked before. Why would you do this? What good explanations might there be for this? And unfortunately, when you're trying to stop people from seeing you obey the law, the only conclusion people draw is that you're trying to not obey the law.
Yeah.
And you don't want people to be able to see. And we're called the Election Transparency Initiative because our goal is that even the people who lose an election should have sufficient confidence in how the election was executed that they can accept the outcome.
Hence your
that's what we need.
So you're calling for election observers to have access to this whole voting process.
Right. Yes, yeah. On both sides,
mm-hmm.
Or three sides if there's a third party, that everyone have that access. It's the openness that provides the confidence in the outcome that we've been advocating and seeking strenuously for, you know, close to 2 years now.
ElectionTransparency.org is the website, ElectionTransparency.org. Let's talk about ballot harvesting or vote trafficking. We're seeing just massive fraud take place. We saw it in Madison, Wisconsin Park, prior to the 2020 election. This is happening, though, all over the nation as far as the harvesting of ballots, even you know, some finding that they're getting 100% voting participation in nursing homes where before there may have been 15 or 20% participation.
Yeah, quite a miracle, huh?
Yeah.
And the as much as I joke about myself that before I went to the dark side and went to law school, I was an engineer. And so I'm a numbers guy. I'm a left brain guy. Data matters to me. Facts, truth matter to me. And when you see a radical shift numerically, like you just described in nursing homes, you know something else is going on. The system has changed. And sure enough, that's what happened. And I mean, there you actually get into full-blown fraud where person A is voting person B ballot. And they've come up with an excuse to do it. COVID was used widely for this. COVID and the so-called emergency responses really exposed a lot of the weaknesses in our election system. Fundamentally, our election systems are out of date. Pennsylvania is still operating basically off a 1937 election code. I mean, there's terminology in their election laws that just doesn't even make sense in 2020, 2021, 2022. Yet they can't get a governor to sign off on what was one of the most thoroughly analyzed and thought through reforms in the whole country, the package that went through the Pennsylvania legislature. And I will say, amusingly, Governor Wolf vetoed it and had a press conference. Oh, I'm vetoing it, and I'm for these reasons. Well, the lead legislator, Seth Grove, who shepherded it through and held the hearings and let anybody who wanted to say anything have a say, showed up at the governor's press conference. And he stood in the back and he said, well, nope, that's not correct. Nope, that's not correct. Nope, that's not correct. The governor clearly had no idea what was in the bill. He was just towing the partisan line. And for leaders like that who are charged with the responsibilities of a governor to not even bother reading the bill and just, you know, heap gasoline on the uncivil fires that are burning in our democracy and our constitutional republic today is wildly irresponsible and really very sad. And we really need to get out of this cycle if we're going to sustain ourselves as a country. We also need to have clean, clear elections that we can have confidence in. I mean, that is a critical element in the success of our democracy.
Ken Cuccinelli with us here today. I'd like to hit another issue, and we're seeing this now with Illinois voters having the chance to sign up, send their ballots for November, send the ballots for spring elections by mail. Forever. I mean, I saw a spokesman for the Illinois State Board of Elections calling this permanent vote by mail, saying this is going to make this more convenient for voters. Address this mail and vote issue. I mean, forever. You get signed up on these lists forever to have ballots sent to you.
Yeah, and, you know, in Illinois, we can jokingly talk about continuing to mail vote ballots to dead people in Chicago forever, right?
Yeah,
might as well
tap
into those jokes. And but the reality is that this imposes incredible levels of insecurity to the system. It is extremely unhelpful for the long-term health and confidence of the voters of Illinois in their own system. And I think it is, frankly, as we said before, you ask yourself, why would someone do this? And I think the answer is because they want fraud. They believe they benefit from fraud or their side benefits from fraud. And that is a sad place for our country to be.
We've got to take a quick break here. Ken Cuccinelli with us here today on Crosstalk. The website, electiontransparency.org. More information to follow here. In just 60 seconds, you're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
For thousands of years, mankind has been fascinated with the question of what will happen in the future. Many have turned to palm readers, horoscopes, or a myriad of psychics for answers. However, one of the places people have refused to look is at the pages of Scripture. Jesus himself was asked by his disciples, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world?" Jesus responded in the Olivet Discourse recorded in Matthew chapters 24 and 25. Bible prophecy teacher and pastor Richard Schmidt addresses and explains these powerful prophetic chapters in his book, Tribulation to Triumph, the Olivet Discourse. VCY America is making available this book for a donation of $15 or more. For your copy of Tribulation to Triumph, call 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today is Ken Cuccinelli, the national chairman of the Election Transparency Initiative, did work in the Trump administration, served in Virginia in state government there as attorney general, also serving in the Senate for a number of years as well. And talking about this matter of election transparency, election integrity, it's a matter that's on the hearts and minds of many across this nation. I'd like to ask you, I've got several things here I'd like to mention about. One, though, is all of this early voting that is taking place across the nation. And really, COVID became the excuse to open this up and to perpetuate this. Yeah. And with that also, we are seeing the results just take forever to come out to us, overnight, the next day, the next week. And they're saying, well, it's due to all of these absentee ballots that are coming in, all these early voters that are coming in. And so many are saying, well, what we need to do is start counting those early votes even earlier. But you're warning about this. You're actually pushing that we prohibit early vote counting. I want you to tell us why. And your perspective on this early voting, is this helping or hurting our country?
So does anybody listening really think that if election, whatever, persuasion, you can characterize them however you like, knew the score of an election, say the week before Election Day, that it wouldn't leak out or wouldn't occasionally leak out, and then everybody will have, it'll be perceived to advantage one side or the other, so you're literally weaponizing it from the inside. We strongly support processing early ballots, but not counting them. So what does that mean? So if you mail in a ballot, if I mail in a ballot from Virginia, they need to check, does my ID requirements match? Does my signature match, et cetera? If those things fail, then they can also contact me and say, hey, Cuccinelli, your ballot is illegal. Do you want to come in and fix it? And so there's curing live that can happen early. And two, then they've done literally everything except count them. This is how Florida was able to count its ballots and be done on election night in 2020, the third largest state in the country, the largest swing state in the country, finished counting on election night with no major complaints from either side. Very impressive performance. Very impressive. And partially, candidly, the benefit of their focus on their election system after Bush v. Gore. Other states hadn't really done that. And so there is a lot of opportunity. But I'm sure everyone listening here has about the same level of trust that I do with anybody having that number beforehand. That's extremely inappropriate, but the pre-processing early does help. Early voting, even experts who are typically overwhelmingly from the left, they call it convenience voting. Convenience voting. That's the expert witness term for early voting, convenience voting. There's no real evidence that it increases turnout. There's logical expectation that it would, but let me tell you some reasons it doesn't. And these are reasons, by the way, given by the Democrat Secretary of State of New Hampshire, the longest serving Secretary of State in the history of the United States of America, Bill Gardner, who served in that position for over 50 years. He's just retiring after this election cycle, I believe. And Democrat, again, and was elected by Republicans and Democrat legislatures up there for years and years because he did a good job. He did a good job. Isn't that heartwarming? Yeah. He did a good job. Thank goodness. And he said, look, parties help turn out voters. They raise voter turnout. There are negatives to parties, but they turn more people out. And they can't do that across 45 days or 30 days, they concentrate voter turnout on that last weekend before Election Day. So there's a reason for it. He also said, and I agree with him, that Election Day is kept special. It's kept special by not having no excuse early voting or having mail-in voting. It also is a community undertaking when it's not all mail-in voting, like, say, Oregon is now. Oregon, and actually Bill Gardner brought charts, extensive charts, again, Democrats, Secretary of State of New Hampshire, and showed how Oregon's voter participation dropped after they went to all mail-in voting. More convenient, less special, less sacred, less citizen participation. And I agree with Bill Gardner's assessment entirely. So, certainly ETI has seen that experience all across the country. And now let's flip it over. Americans like convenience, right? So when asked, would you like 15 days of early voting? You can go in whenever you want. Wow, that sounds easy. Sure, I'd love that. But that's without telling them, are you concerned about ballot security for those 15 days? What happens every night when the polls close? Are you concerned about both parties being able to watch for 15 grueling days instead of one long day, which provides the security of a kind of the double check of both sides being able to watch everything? And the list of security and transparency problems goes on and on and on with early voting. It is a serious problem for the security of elections. It's a serious problem for the transparency of elections, and it's a serious problem for the logistics. In Virginia, one of the changes the Democrats made in Virginia, I mentioned to you that they got control and made many changes in 2019 in Virginia. One of them was they went to 45 days of early voting, and all the election officials around the state are exhausted. They have to run a 45-day election now. And it's brutally difficult, particularly when they're not all that well-funded. So there are major problems with early voting.
Yeah, and there's another aspect to this as well. We just saw it happen in the Wisconsin primary as people were early voting, and then all of a sudden candidates announced, well, we're stepping out of this election. We're not going to vote now. And so then we have, you know, election personnel. People are feeling, you know, okay, so my vote's not counting anymore. And so then it's trying to recall all these people to come back and, you know, cast a second ballot, you know, and the confusion that results when we don't have an election day as such.
Well, and also, look, I've been a candidate 5 times, and, you know, whatever people think about politics and politicians, I want to tell you what I'm going to do, because I believe it's good for Virginia. I believe it's good for America. And I roll that out over time. If you're already voting in mid-September, but you weren't paying attention until Labor Day, you really haven't heard the whole comparison between candidates. And I mean, when you look at the presidential race in 2020, by the time they got to the third presidential debate, which, you know, well, the second one didn't take place. The third one did take place, and it was a disaster for Biden, whereas the first one was really a disaster for Trump. But an enormous percentage of the voting had already taken place. So the head-to-head comparison between the candidates never took place before an enormous chunk of people voted. So, yeah, early voting sounds nice, but when you really boil it down, it is very problematic. There are significant problems with early voting that are masked by the convenience and the desire for convenience that Americans love so much.
We've got to get 2 issues in before our next break and then phone calls here from our listeners. And the first issue I'd like to talk about is this threat to federalize elections. I mean, when we saw H.R. 1 coming out, I mean, it made your hair stand up straight on the back of your neck here, removing all the state safeguards and in election integrity. Is that still a threat?
So first of all, yes is the answer, but understand this bill wasn't written in 2020. This bill was written years before. This was not the left's response. They couched it that way. They tried to sell it that way to what they viewed as their perspective on 2020 problems, they have been trying to get a Washington takeover of elections for a long, long time. And nobody concerned about security would ever want Washington to take over elections. No one concerned about efficiency or competency would ever want Washington to take over elections. Well, then what? Why might they want this? Well, gee, maybe they want messy elections because they know they have a litigation advantage. Maybe they want messy elections because they know that while fraud happens all over, they're going to do a lot more of it a lot more aggressively and benefit from it more. So it's about competitive advantage. So H.R. 1 is the federal takeover of elections, and it was a very comprehensive undertaking. And what do I mean by that? It reached way beyond elections. So another issue I deal with is border security, and let me tell you why the two are connected. There was a part of this election bill from the radical left that mandated that states put every adult that comes onto any state database, that could be public health because you came and got a vaccination, it could be the school system if you're 18 in the school system, it could be your driver's license, and many states give non-citizens driver's licenses, and they all get dumped on the voter rolls regardless of citizenship status. Notice the language in the bill said individuals. It didn't say citizens. They explicitly avoided the word citizen. Hmm. That's step one. So you end up literally with millions of non-citizens on the voter rolls all of a sudden. And you say, but it's illegal for them to vote. Well, in another part of the bill, they removed all criminal penalties for anybody put on the rolls this way who voted.
Wow.
On the good, happy side, they would say, well, we can't blame them if our system put them in a position to break the law. Well, you could say that, then don't put them in that position in the first place. But here they are breaking the law with no penalty. And then it starts to explain an open borders policy. It gives another reason to see an open borders policy that not even Democrats support President Biden on. I mean, Democrats have opposed this. When I say Democrats, I mean American, ordinary Americans, our friends who view themselves as Democrat voters. The average Democrat voter has opposed the Biden immigration policy since within weeks of him taking office and beginning to implement it. But it, you see how it's connected to their effort to have this Washington takeover of elections. And it's very nefarious. It's got plenty of examples in history that they're learning from, but none of them are very admirable.
Yeah. And to see what's happening at the borders, I'm guessing in your former role, it just breaks your heart to see what's taking place to our nation right now.
Yeah, they have certainly undermined a lot of good work there, and the communities down there, are in tragic shape. Fentanyl is running amok across our country. Every town's a border town because wherever you live that you're listening to us, hard drugs that are killing people are as cheap as they have been in a long, long time because they're produced by the Mexican drug cartels. The only exception to that is cocaine, which they transport in, and they transport all the ones they make in. So they literally own the hard drug trade, and it's killing Americans all over the country.
Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. I'm going to have our guest address the issue, what can I do? What as I, as one, can do? What can I do to make a difference on this issue? Their website, electiontransparency.org. Back in a minute.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brennan House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Well, right here in Tennessee, where I live, there's a lot of news about a new plant going in by Ford to build electric F-Series trucks. And it's a 3,600-acre complex of almost 6 square miles, and it's said to create 6,000 new jobs. Many people are excited about it, and land prices are starting to go up big time. But here's the reality. Do we really need electric trucks, much less electric cars? And what about the battery whole production side of this? Well, it's a very important article you should read at AmericanPolicy.org. And what is involved is a lot of government money, a lot of public-private partnerships, and the enriching of a few for something that's not going to work. Recently, California, during their heat wave, asked people not to plug in their cars to drain down the power on the grid. Rethink green energy, folks. I'm Brennan House.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Mr. Ken Cuccinelli is with us here today from the Election Transparency Initiative. Background here in the Trump administration, also in the Virginia legislature, as well as the Attorney General for the state of Virginia. And just before we pick up our first calls here, Mr. Cuccinelli, many times people sit here, they're frustrated and they're angry, actually, as to what's taking place in our nation. But they said, I'm just one person. What can I do? What would you say to our listeners how they as one can make a difference?
Well, anybody concerned about election security actually can do something themselves. And that is one of the great things about this subject. You can even be paid to do it. If you go get trained as an election official at your local election office, and they all recruit citizens to run elections all across the country, no exceptions, they often break down the election officials by party. So if you consider yourself a Democrat or you consider yourselves a Republican or an independent, they do have a third category frequently, you can sign up that way. There are more Democrat election officials across the country than there are Republicans. And often, depending on the state, the local party chairman, again, whether it's Democrat or Republican, has to approve you as an election official, but that's not typically a problem. And you can go inside, and you can not only see how it's run, you can run it and be paid to do it. The pay varies all over the country from, $85 to $225, mm-hmm. but it isn't pure volunteer work. You actually help your fellow citizens by doing the citizenship duty, and you get paid a little bit to do it. And we all appreciate your willingness to go and do it. And that has really taken off. Again, the Democrats have done this for a long time. Republicans are really just kind of waking up to the value of it in their communities.
Okay. And, folks, as you go to their website, you'll find also that there is a pledge that those running for office can take to sign on to these various principles and policies that they could be supportive of and reject others. So check it out at electiontransparency.org. Let's begin with Dominique, who is calling in today. Hi, Dominique. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that neither of you are saying this is like solely the Democrats' fault. I truly believe that we are in a situation where we, the people, whether we're Democrats, Republicans, Independents, need to take back our elections from the powers that be that are trying to, steal it from us. And I feel it's us versus them, because no matter what side wins, there's people saying the election was stolen through the machines. And I truly, truly believe we need to get rid of these machines. And I think it was even more clear when the Montgomery Declaration, the whistleblower recently, like last week and a half or so, I know it was reported at that Moment of Truth Summit, but anyway, he said that the FBI and the CIA have been involved in our through the electronic voting machines. And so if we don't give them online access, we can also help eliminate a lot of those errors. Violations of the voter rolls and stuff. But I just wanted to say really quick, there's a Air Force Colonel Sean Smith who has been working in the Pentagon and all that. He's retired now. But he said that he examined the voting machines. He does the $45 billion space equipment and all that stuff to be sure our country is safe from vulnerabilities. And he said there was no supply chain security, no oversight from any governmental body. They were mostly Chinese-made components. There's no way to ever be sure that these systems are secure, and there's nothing we can do now. He said we could spend trillions of dollars trying to verify those systems are secure. It's too late. They're already corrupt from the beginning, unquote.
Any comment on that, Mr. Cuccinelli?
Yeah, so I think that the ideal arrangement is paper ballots or the official ballot, which means no electronic adjudication. You've probably heard that phrase. That's literally looking at a screen and deciding things like, does the signature match or what was the voter's intent? And that's gets to a point where the judge is voting for the voter. And so you get to paper ballots as the official ballots. And then the only machines that really should matter are the counting machines. Counters are more accurate than humans. Obviously, they can be programmed and so forth. And there are programming errors. And we could go through the nitty-gritty of how those can happen. But that is the ideal. And your caller mentioned not having them connected to the Internet. We certainly agree with that. And that has actually become a rather accepted standard. Doesn't mean they all function that way, but that is accepted as appropriate protocol. You create a computer just to do the optical scanning. You run ballots through it. And yes, it counts, but the machine is an unofficial count. And if there are any questions, and there should be spot checks on the machines, you literally hand count random machine counts to make sure you don't have programming errors. We believe that is the gold standard and that it can be done quickly, which is important because the longer there are delays in counting, and I wish this weren't the case, but we're Americans, we want it done yesterday, the more suspicious people are. We just sort of have this expectation as Americans that this is going to be done instantly, and it isn't done instantly, not when you're double-checking against how many people signed in at the poll books. How many ballots do we have? What were the vote counts? Do the vote counts add up to more than we have ballots? Okay, well, that's a problem. We have to figure out why that problem exists. Those things can slow things down, and they might just be simple mistakes. One of my races was a recount. It took four reviews to find a transposed number, a 78 that was really an 87. Hmm. Didn't change the outcome of the race. But those kinds of simple mistakes do get made, and they get made repeatedly, which is interesting. So we do need redundant systems. Much of what your caller said, I think, are legitimate concerns. And I'm a big believer in KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. That also, by the way, that also makes it cheaper. And one other thing, if there are going to be machines involved, and I think at least as counters it makes sense, they should be done with open source program code. That means literally any of us can see the code so we can apply it ourselves to machines to see what it does. None of this proprietary Dominion software stuff. Get that stuff out so that we have complete openness even in our machines.
Thank you for the call, and we're just seconds remaining. Mr. Cuccinelli, thank you so much for joining us here today. A lot of information and much more to say, but thank you for your efforts to promote that transparency and integrity in the voting process.
Glad to do it.
Mr. King Cuccinelli, our guest here today on Crosstalk, and sorry to other callers that have been on hold, but important information today, and you can check out further information and their pledge for candidates as well at electiontransparency.org, electiontransparency.org. And as always, folks, be informed and cast a prayerful vote. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from BCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to BCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.